you know, when I was telling people how to behave before we got to the grudging giving part of the story, we had our carrots and our tofu and our kale and onions and whatnot. I kept saying, the people have to be stingy. Don't give us anything. Stingy, stingy. But, you know, I think what was really going on, although no version of Stone Soup I've ever heard really gets into the heads of the people in the village, I think probably they thought they didn't have anything to give. I mean, they looked around their pantries, they could see they were empty, but they didn't think they had enough to spare. But when they began to give, their riches grew. And if we had all day, I would have given everybody a vegetable or chunk of tofu or whatever, so that we could enact the story in its full glory of everybody contributing until there's a huge cauldron of soup for everybody. I wanted to tell that story today, not only because our theme is generosity, but because the stone soup phenomenon is real. It's actually been scientifically studied and found to be a metaphor for something solidly true. Science supports the hypothesis that when we give, we feel better. We end up feeling better than we did before. Even if we think of giving as a privation, that's not actually how it plays out. Giving causes a surge of oxytocin, dopamine, and serotonin, so notable that it has been dubbed the giving glow. It literally strengthens our hearts to give. Our blood pressure improves. And over years of this behavior, we have a healthier circulatory system. Elderly folks who volunteer in their communities live longer than their compatriots who don't. Three researchers at Harvard Business School and the University of British Columbia studied the effects of spending money on oneself compared to spending money on other people. While retail therapy is said to cheer us up, what they found and reported in Science magazine was that money we spend on ourselves doesn't actually increase our happiness. Using the same money for others, whether a gift for a friend or a contribution to a charity, measurably does. The lead researcher, Dr. Elizabeth Dunn, says, one of the best parts about being human is that we have evolved to find joy in helping others. And when you think about it, I mean, once you get past the, you know, sort of simplistic survival of the fittest fight of nature red in tooth and claw that we know is not the whole story, evolutionarily, this all makes sense. As a health reporter named Markham Hyde summarizes it, put simply, humans have thrived because we can come together to form large interdependent groups of unrelated members. And there is strength in numbers. If helping other people didn't feel good, it's arguable that we would never have been able to form the tribes and later the societies that are the building blocks of prosperous civilizations. So giving is clearly, it's wired into us to make us feel good, to make us healthier and happier in the long term. But I don't want to go on too long in this vein because the catch is also that why we give matters. The more focused that we are on others rather than on getting any benefit for ourselves, the more it benefits us. Go figure. We have so many dreams. We perceive so many needs, other people's needs. They are clearly so much bigger than our resources that we can just give up. I mean, you know, the people in the village, they're kind of the butt of this story. But who among us has not said, it's just too much, I can't help everybody. I'm just gonna hold on to what I've got here. I mean, we give some, of course we do. We have some tremendously generous people I'm looking at right here. But how often do we really allow ourselves to be bold in our generosity? Research has been done, the evidence is in. When we give, we feel more generous, and both the giving and the generosity improve our lives. And it can be contagious. That's really important because one of our fears, one of the things that makes us hold tightly to what we have, is that we'll give and others won't. They'll be takers and we'll be givers, which means we'll lose out. And that doesn't feel so good in the long run after all. Well, a Stanford and Harvard research team tried this contagion question using an organization. One of the organizations they used in their research was one that we know well here, Life Moves, then called Envision. They told a group of research subjects about Life Moves and the work they do, which is trying to provide a transition to permanent housing for people who are homeless. They gave the research subjects a little bonus, just a small one, on top of the compensation they were receiving as subjects. Moves if they wanted to. And then the researchers read them several little stories about homelessness. Some subjects were told that other people who heard these stories they were hearing, responded with great empathy. While others were told that the response to the little vignettes they were hearing was indifference. None of this was true. Researchers lie. There was no association between the vignettes a person heard and the response others had had. It was completely random. But this is what responded with empathy, reported feeling more empathy themselves, and it turned into generosity. They gave 2.5 times as much to the homelessness organization, Life Moves, as those who thought others were indifferent to the stories that they'd heard. Maybe that's what happened to the people of the village when they first saw others not contributing and then others contributing to the stone soup. And that reminds me of an even more ancient story. This is the only one of the miracles of Jesus that is described by all 4 gospel writers. The story Jesus and his disciples are in, it's variously described, but a big empty place with a lot of people, and they and all these people are hungry. And the disciples look and discover all they seem to have among all of them is 5 loaves of bread and 2 fishes. Well, there's 5,000 people out there as well as the 13 of them. That's not going to feed all these hungry people who have gathered to hear Jesus. And the story goes in all 4 versions that Jesus and the disciples began giving out the bread and the fish, and there was enough for all 5,000 people and 12 bushel baskets of bread left over. Way more than enough. I've heard a lovely interpretation of this story from various quarters, which is that Jesus did not work a miracle over these loaves and these fishes and turn them into enough for a huge crowd. In this interpretation, what he did was evoke the generosity of the people. Their fear and their sense of scarcity made them selfish, made them a little stingy. I don't have enough. This crowd is too big. If the disciples find out I've got some food, they're going to want me to contribute to the whole picnic. And look at this. There's all these people. This crowd is so big. Its needs are so many. What can I possibly do that will make a significant difference? So I better just hold on tightly to what I've got. But like the stranger who comes to town in stone soup, Jesus quietly inspired them. At first grudging, just those little bits, and then they pulled out this and that that they had been holding back until there was enough for 5,000 people and lots of leftovers besides. I love that interpretation. Some people find it enraging. They think it's a, this is a quote, lame substitute for a real miracle. But I think evoking generosity in the human heart is pretty miraculous. And we're seeing some of them right now in these hurricanes and their accompanying tornadoes and floods and power outages, which means, of course, that the people most in need are surrounded by other people who are also in need. Yes, we'll all swing into action with FEMA and blankets and crews from the American Red Cross and all that. But at first, what you've got is just a whole lot of desperate people. And I read a story of a pastor in Dallas, North Carolina, named Cameron Bryson, who received a call at Marion, a town about 1,400 feet up in the Appalachian Mountains, had been cut off from floodwaters and cut off by the floodwaters, and all the roads were just completely washed out, cracked. It was about an hour and a half from Dallas. Either. It was right in the hurricane zone. But they heard this little town was completely cut off, which they were not. So he got this call on a Saturday night, and Sunday morning he assembled a group of 35 churchgoers and asked around the church and borrowed a pickup from somebody who owned one, and they filled it up with food and water and gas and, you know, all the things that you need after a natural disaster, and they started the hour and a half drive up to Marion from Dallas, which of course took them around downed trees and watching out for snap power lines, and eventually they came to an impassable road and they had to just carry everything they could from the truck and proceed on foot. I love this story. Bryson says, as the small group approached the first house, they heard a baby crying and a mother and father came to the door. When Pastor Bryson and the others started handing them food for their five-month-old, they had brought formula, among other things, the mother's eyes welled up. They had just run out of baby formula the night before. Bryson said, "We just happened to have exactly what they needed." It was incredible. Anyway, that church has kept on doing that since Helene struck, making several deliveries over these terrible roads and sometimes walking. It's an amazing thing when you discover that you just happen to have exactly what someone else needs. That's what we're committing to when we say one of our shared values is generosity. Taking the risk to make that discovery. We covenant to freely and compassionately share our faith, presence, and resources. Our generosity connects us to one another in relationships of interdependence and mutuality. Of course it does, and not just to each other here in this congregation, but to the wider community, the organizations we connect to as justice partners, to the other people in our lives, because this generosity is, it comes alive in us. And it catches on, and it feels good. And just like chasing dopamine anywhere else, we keep chasing it once we discover, oh, that feels great. And here's what I love. We cultivate a spirit of gratitude and hope. Gratitude, coming just a few words after this word generosity, I'm thinking they the framers of this value, this piece of the bylaws, don't mean gratitude for being on the receiving end. They recognize, oh, when we are generous, when we give our kale, or most of it, and our onion, and realize, okay, I've got something to give, then we discover we're in this network that makes us feel marvelous. We get that giving glow, and we get those connections that only a community of mutual care can experience. That's what we feel grateful for, which in turn feeds generosity, because there's no remedy for an attitude of scarcity like gratitude. It just makes you feel like there's just more to go around. More in your pantry, more in your pockets, enough for everybody. And then this also cultivates a spirit of hope. As I said, we look around the world and the needs are so many. I mean, just from one storm in one place. And you multiply that out toward all with all the illnesses and all the wars and all the climate worries, and it just seems like, what can we possibly do? What can our contribution actually do? But when we get this ball rolling, when we get the contagion of generosity, when we feel that surge of, oh, I actually made a difference, then the other gift we receive is the gift of hope. So may it be.